Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Field Pass. This is Dan, and I have John with me for the final regular season game preview. Illinois coming up to Wrigley Field to play Northwestern, trophy game. We're back. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody.
Happy Thanksgiving. What is the opposite of a barn burner? Because with the weather and the teams, I don't know, maybe a pitcher's duel to keep it thematic, because that's what I'm thinking we're getting tomorrow.
I mean, I like that analogy. Who is Brett Bielema? Is he a Joe Maddon? Is he a David Ross?
Yeah, I was going to say, I feel like that heft, you got to think catcher, you know, or maybe an old pitching coach, just a guy who could really sling it back in the day, throw it 95 on the black.
One of the funny things I saw was Brett's press conference this week. One of the media members asked him who his favorite Cubs player, favorite Cubs memory was. And you could tell on the spot, he didn't really know. Uh-huh. He didn't have much of an answer. And so he was like, you know, I've thrown the first pitch out a couple times and I just have some good memories going to the ballpark, and just gave a very vague general response versus saying like Fergie Jenkins or mm-hmm. I don't know, coming up with some deeper cut. And I was like, you could tell he definitely is not a baseball guy, which we love. Yeah. Because as long as Brett Bielema only cares about football, you know, he's going to win us some football games.
Well, it's funny, too. I was listening to the Barry Lunny press conference media session, I should say. And he was talking about how like his initial response when asked, you know, what team did you follow growing up? And she was like, oh, the Cardinals. But then he kind of realized where that could take him. So he's like, oh, but also the Cubs and the Braves, which makes sense because like anyone who's south of the Mason-Dixon line, like they get the Braves are obviously the big national. But because of GN and because of the Cardinals' success, like, obviously, it makes sense that he had those as his answer, and then the Cardinals just being the most successful of the three probably stuck out to him. But it's so funny how there's like kind of like even political, like baseball, like lines that people are walking, and it's just like I'm just happy to your point that they're all football guys, so it doesn't necessarily matter that much because they're not thinking too long and hard about it.
I'm a little bit concerned still about the sidelines and how close they are to the right field corner and kind of the third baseline. And in the corner, I'm worried. Do you think we'll scheme differently when it comes? Like, Brett's so detail-oriented, and he pointed out a year ago that when there was the last game at Wrigley, I think it was Iowa Northwestern, that the sidelines were both on the same side. And he's like, we're mm-hmm. absolutely not doing that. He said, as long as we can get things straightened out where we're each on a different sideline, you know, we can make it work. But do you think with his detail orientation that he will be making sure we don't run plays to the boundary in the back corner of the end zone that could potentially get a player hurt? Or do you think that doesn't come into play at all?
Yeah, it's a good question because I feel like it doesn't necessarily affect Northwestern as much as it would affect us, because if there is any modicum of planning for that level of detail, it usually, if in my opinion, it would be a coach throwing to their sideline more or running plays to their sideline, because you either get more favorable calls or you don't get unfavorable calls. So Northwestern probably isn't thinking in that realm. Maybe it subconsciously influences them to throw more towards the third base side, because that's where their sideline will be. And so they either don't get pass interference or OPI calls, or they get more pass interference calls by the Illini, which I believe, at least at the college level, maybe even the professional level, but more at the college level and lower, that coaches should just do that all the time, because it definitely affects referees. Like they totally let the sideline influence them because they just, I don't know, don't have the stones. But for Brett Bielema being on the first base side, where you have that kind of like you're almost running up against it, it might be in that game plan of like, hey, if we are thinking of throwing to that sideline because we know that we could maybe either get away with a little bit more, or we're going to get some favorable calls if we throw it up to Pat or Zachary or Alex Kapka-Jones. Like, maybe that changes a little bit as you get closer, but I don't think it's going to necessarily limit the explosive play calling tendencies, because you would hope that you're not fading someone out that far and you're throwing to the red line. But when you get closer, then it's probably more just like fades. And yeah, maybe that adjusts it. But even then, I don't even really love fade calls in the red zone to begin with. But long story short, I think it might influence it a little bit, but nothing that is like super substantial.
My thought would be that the certain personnel he sends on a, you know, route to the corner of the end zone is rather than sending Pat Bryant or Zachary, maybe it's Alex Kappka-Jones, or maybe it's one of the younger guys that it's like, you know what? These guys aren't as valuable. If they were to somehow get banged up on a play like that, we still have our stars. So maybe we're seeing crossing routes in the middle of the end zone for Pat Bryant, mm-hmm. our favorite slant play.
Yep. Run a little mesh.
But to just build on, I just want to mention an observation I had of Brett and how detailed he is. In his press conference, he was also talking about how halftime is extended by 3 minutes. And last year, when they played, or you know, one of the last games they played at Wrigley, I think that Iowa Northwestern game, they only gave them 2 extra minutes of halftime because of the walk and how far it is to get from the field to the locker room. They were able to get an extra minute added to halftime, so it's a 23-minute halftime. And those are the kind of things where, like, they're meaningless at the end of the day. An extra 3 minutes, I guess, isn't huge. But to Brett, like, those little details matter so much, and making sure everything's fair and his team is getting what they need. So those are that's just a microcosm of who he is and what he cares about and why this team is 8-3. It's those little details adding up.
That's exactly what I was just about to say. It's the entire reason that a team that doesn't have this like massive talent gap or even like a small talent deficiency is going out there and winning 8 games, potentially 9 games in a season, because to the layperson, it's a like meaningless detail. And that's not me like calling about it. It's more like to us, yeah, obviously it's meaningless, but because he takes it that seriously with like everything he does, it shows up in then the very meaningful and very important moments. Or moments that can turn meaningful and important because he's just that detail oriented. And, you know, I know that when we started the podcast, we were complaining about his fourth down conservatism, and there have been some questionable, you know, challenges or clock management towards ends of half or game. And it's like, I generally trust him because we know that he's at least considering everything. Now, maybe sometimes the results aren't exactly what we want, but we know that the process is pretty true.
Yeah, we're in great hands as Illini fans with Brett Bielema at the helm. We had some moments last year, the defense with a first-year defensive coordinator didn't look good, and Brett was getting a little bit of heat, but I mean, an 8-5 after we lost in 2022 to Mississippi State in the bowl game. And this year we're 8-3 with a chance potentially to get to 10-3. Like,
yep,
we have not seen these times in decades and decades, and it just feels good to just smell the roses every now and again.
Well, and before we go like full blown Northwestern, like on that note, the fact that the Illini, which I mean, at least in like my time as a fan, it's just been like you assume the absolute worst. And I know people have various reference points in their different football fans, whether it be the Illini, whether it be their professional team, whatever have you. Like, I am just so used to like getting kicked in the nads. And the fact that like we went down and scored a touchdown and we're up, and then you're like, okay, we just need like something to happen. And then you get an interception that probably wasn't an interception, called an interception. Overturned, you have a fourth down conversion where you thought you were getting some pressure, and it's just you feel the impending doom of all your Illini fears realized, and that just scar tissue that had been built up over time coming to fruition. And then, you know, you're driving downfield like, okay, we might have something here, you can get in field goal range, and then there's some weird like absolute shenanigans going on. You get like a false start, you're not running the right plays, you're running a run play. I was just like, okay, so this is how it's going to end. We're going to get like, oh, we're going to get 80% of the required yards, and then we're just going to turn into a pumpkin. And then you get Pat Bryant doing Pat Bryant things. And it's just like, how is this happening to the Illini? Like, the fact that we're sitting here in late November with 8 wins, potentially being able to get 9 favored. We're like, Vegas is putting us at 9 wins. Now, obviously we are not yet, but like the being a 7+ point favorite is significant. It's like being a potentially 9-win team with the ability to go get 10 wins in a season where you've only really lost to like 2 of your 3 losses are to top 5 teams. It's just like, what an absolute dream of a season.
Nothing feels better than after a big moment like that, the text you get from the non-Illini fans, like, wow, people that you thought don't care at all about football or care at all, obviously, about Illinois, that are texting you like, wow, that was crazy. One of the most unbelievable plays of all time. And nothing better than when you're on the right side of a game like that in a moment like that. And just, I don't know, you just ride the good vibes now into Northwestern and ride the vibes into the bowl game. And, you know, John, what do we say? 1% chance of a college football playoff appearance.
Hey, give us at least something. I mean, and even the fact that like we were the talk of the town on like social media, like everyone is just posting that clip.
Oh yeah.
And you know, some of it was to the Rutgers chagrin, like them gacking it, but still it's still amazing. The fact that like everyone was just like looking at that and like, how did that happen? How do you get a last second touchdown in that scenario? But it, you know, it was the best to your point. Yeah. Like everyone's talking about it, family, friends, Thanksgiving. I hope you were all, you know, celebrating and talking about the Illini football season. But yeah, it was just I still can't believe it that you went from a like Luke's getting a little pressure, hopefully he's thrown it to someone who has a chance, oh, Pat's kind of wide open, okay, get down, Pat. And then it's like, oh well, maybe he's gonna get out of bounds, that's pretty aware, so we can have time to, oh wait, he's turning the corner, what's it? He's scoring a touchdown. Like that was absolutely unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean, I was jumping on my couch. I don't know, I think everyone was, but that was one insane of the crazier plays that we've seen this college football year. And that's why we watch the sport, folks.
The texts that were fired out with just all caps, just word salads of nothingness, just texting those out because the amount of happiness that could be felt in that, it was unbelievable. But yeah, that was last week. And now this week, I really hope that, you know, that Northwestern can't, you know, take the shine off of the season. Not that they really will be able to completely, but just like in a game where you're going up against your rival, where, you know, Bielema has had mixed success against them, just like go out there and take care of business.
Your number 23 college football playoff Illini against a 4-7 Northwestern team. And I don't know, I was trying to fight the good fight on social media of Illinois should be ranked higher than 23. Not to say we're in contention really for the playoffs, but we should have been in the conversation at least. Some of the resumes that we stack up against with our ranked wins, not really having any bad losses. Minnesota's our worst loss and they're a bowl team, and our other two losses are to two of the top teams in the college football playoffs. So I think Illinois should have been, you know, closer to maybe 20-21 in the rankings. I think a little bit of disrespect to be ranked 23, but at the end of the day, like 23 feels pretty good. We're not getting the playoff anyway, and we're almost assuredly locked into a Citrus Bowl, assuming Indiana doesn't lose to Purdue this week, which I don't want to hold my breath, but Purdue did give us a game this year, so you never know what happens in a rivalry game. But assuming Indiana takes care of business, which they should, we're going to the Citrus Bowl. So to me, rank us wherever you want to rank us. Let us take on Bama and their third stringers, and I'll be more than happy, even if we get beat down by 42 points.
Well, that's just because your fiance is a Bama alum, so you the happy future wife, happy life. So
the trolling I've done in that family group chat is out of control. I found every Alabama, Illinois, you know, meme or projection, and I've put it in there. There's one that was sad guy on a bus, 8-3, and it was the Alabama logo, and then it was happy guy on the same bus looking out the other window where it was sunshine and rainbows, and 8-3, and it was the Illinois. And I almost swept the group chat with ha-has on that one. So
that was an unreal meme. I love that. And I mean, it's true, but I also have had, I love that, you know, fighting the good fight. And I know Robert's done this, you're doing this. Like, I have such disdain for the SEC because they love smelling their own farts, but then they also can't admit that, like, of course they're the best conference top to bottom in terms of like talent aggregation, but they have to be able to admit that they're having a down year. And like the 2024 season in a vacuum is a bad year for the SEC. Like, yes, that doesn't mean that their teams are bad, but that doesn't necessarily mean that like they should be deserving of all these spots just because there's a bunch of averageness. And the fact that like now there is a difference obviously with how seriously the Big Ten takes it, because they still have a bunch of talent top to bottom, but that bottom, you know, third, I would say, is kind of waning, whereas, you know, SEC fans, say for maybe Mississippi State and Vanderbilt's having a good year, but like they're still, you know, ready to load the coffers for buying a team for next year. So like I get it from that sense, but yeah, the fact that like the playoff committee, which is what their own, or they're run by the, or the playoff is run by ESPN, which obviously owns the SEC network and I guess the ACC network too, but like it's just I can't stand the discourse in college football this year, because you finally have like a down year from the SEC and they're just like, oh, we actually, because we're all like kind of the same, that means we deserve more. And it's like, no, that's not what playing the games on the field mean, because if you lose a bunch of games to bad teams, that gets held against you. But I digress. This isn't the Line of Football podcast, but it does pertain now that we're a national brand. We're turning our Brett Bielema, it built the statue. He's turning us into, he's putting us in national conversations.
Hey, I'm here for any conversation that has to do with Illinois and college football playoffs, or even just big bowl games, because how often do we get to have these conversations? A few over the last couple of years, credit to Brett Bielema, but this is the reward we get when we have a great season, is to have these conversations and to talk through the fun stuff, which is the bowl games and the big moments. So,
Yep, we have this luxury now.
On that note, it doesn't really matter, in my opinion, what happens in the Northwestern game in order to get to the bowl game we want to get to. But for optics and for just really icing on the cake of a great season, you want to win a trophy game. I feel pretty good that Northwestern losing to Michigan last week, if they somehow beat Michigan, then they would have been playing for a bowl game against us. But the fact that they're 4-7, they're no longer really in that bowl contention. I feel a little better about that, knowing they're not going to have the extra motivation to try to come out and beat us. And looking at their last five games, they played Wisconsin, they played Iowa, lost to both big. Then they beat Purdue in a close game, and then they lost big to Michigan and Ohio State. And over those four losses, for the past five games, the average loss is 28.5 points. So they've gotten smoked. The last two games, though, the Ohio State game at Wrigley, they actually led early, and into the second quarter it was a tie game, and then Ohio State scored 31 straight points in that one. And last week against Michigan, similar story. It was, I think it was a four-point game with a couple minutes before the half, and then Michigan outscored them 40-0 from that point on. So their second halves have not looked good, but they do have a tendency against good teams to stick around early and make things interesting before, I think, their lack of talent loses out. So got to come prepared early and make sure you can take a punch right off the bat, because they've been known to do that here the last few weeks. And then you just got to press the gas pedal in the second half.
Agreed. I feel like the worry, and I'm sure you feel the same way, is the worry of a running quarterback threat turning into like a Purdue level game is very high. Like, that is the one thing where just like finding some competence early for the Northwestern offense that leads to like that growing and evolving to then, okay, we're selling out against the run, but then all these passing lanes are open. So even though a guy who hasn't been a successful passer the entire season then starts beating it with his arm because his legs are working so well, then it turns into just like the worst nightmare. So I agree that, yeah, it probably isn't, you know, altering the season's trajectory and still win on balance. But the fact that you can go out there and potentially have your rival beat you in a down year for them and like one of your best years recently, it would still leave a pretty sour taste as the final game. So I'm really hoping that, yeah, it's not a repeat of our other protected rival game where Purdue, you know, went out there and probably should have won that game and had all the momentum late in that game. So to your point of, you know, coming out and imposing your will in the second half, making sure that, yeah, you don't have a repeat of anything Purdue related where they came out, gained some confidence and momentum in the second half and seemed like they couldn't be stopped. That is something that, you know, I feel like it's imperative that you just can't have that happen a second go around.
I also just want, if we take care of business, to be ranked 17, 18 when the season ends and conference championship games have been played, because then, you know, optics wise, you win a bowl game, or even if you lose a bowl game, you finish in the top 20, which I think every single Illini fan in the country would have locked in that season before the year and said, you know, absolutely sign us up for a top 20 finish in college football. So you got to win against Northwestern or all of a sudden you drop back out of the rankings and stuff. And it's harder to finish in that top 20 for optics, but I don't think, you know, a big rivalry week in a Northwestern team that's beaten down, I don't think that many college football fans will be tuned in. It's not necessarily the premier game of the weekend. So
yeah, what are your thoughts on the home field advantage of Northwestern having our, and you noted that, you know, they got off to a bit of a hot start against an Ohio State, and I don't necessarily think that's because neither team had played there yet this season, but maybe them having some familiarity and us going into like a not only the travel, but then, you know, you're even talking about like the locker room being far away and just having like these different feels to the game where your sideline is right up against things. And I'm curious what your thoughts are, because I don't know exactly if I fully fleshed out how I feel about it, but I'm kind of leaning to it might give Northwestern a bit. They say home field is 3 points generally in football. And maybe that's waning over the past couple of years, but I feel like it might actually be worth something because they've already played there and have some familiarity with the venue.
I almost think in a weird way, it helps us because it's so foreign and different that our team will be excited about it and locked into every detail versus if it was just a sleepwalk game up in Evanston, like it's easy to kind of get in your normal routine and not wake up for the first half. But I think the fact that it's different, the fans are excited about it. I'm sure players' families, the players themselves are going to be excited to play in a cool venue like that. So I almost think it creates a little excitement and a little extra juice for Illinois, you know, to play. Whereas Northwestern's already done it. It was cool and different the first time, and it's still going to be cool, but it's like, all right, it's not as exciting to them. Maybe they're not as locked in. I don't know. It's still the familiarity, like you said, maybe helps them, but I almost think, like I said, in a weird way, it might benefit Illinois that we get the fun, you know, first time experience.
Yeah, I'm generally in agreement with you. I flip flop between how I feel about it in terms of familiarity versus just like it being a true neutral site but it's one of those where I am curious, and if there is maybe a little bit of a sleepy start, it's because guys are like, wait, what's going on here? It feels like I'm on like a practice field with how much grass is over there and how it's not just like, you know, fans right on top of me, or it feels like my high school, you know, days where you had like one side of the stadium was filled with your home fans and the other side had like a couple bleachers or something like that. So I'm very curious to see how this starts, but I mean, it's going to be a cold one, so I don't know if it's going to get out to a hot start regardless, but so maybe that gives us a little runway to actually ramp up and get familiarity. But I don't know if it necessarily hurts or helps, but the fact that we started as 10-point favorites and now we're notched down a little bit to like, I think it's around 8, maybe 7.5. Maybe some of that has to do with the increased familiarity with Northwestern, or maybe just the weather in general. People think it's going to be a lower scoring game.
Yeah, 25 degrees and sunny, but that's by far the coldest game we've played in. And I think that does change game planning a little bit. Like weather factors in it. It's going to be, you know, mildly windy as well. So luckily Brett has his team practice out in the elements down in Champaign frequently, so they're ready for a game like this. Again, more detail that, you know, certain coaches may just keep you in the indoor practice facility and make it, I don't know, they don't coach in that toughness like Brett does. So hopefully the guys are ready to go in that one. Is there a key matchup or, you know, player you're looking at in this contest?
I think the biggest thing, especially on the backs of us talking about the weather, the driver for the Illini offense all year has been the passing game. Like, you can set your watch to it. You know that Pat's going to get his. You know that Zachary is going to be able to be a difference maker in some games where he's healthy. Colin Dixon, Alex Kapka-Jones are being able to contribute. Even Tanner Arkin has had his good games. But, like, the inconsistent part has been the rushing attack. So when you have a cold game, maybe even a windy game, where you're not able to have consistency with your passing attack, are you able to lean on the run game? So it really comes down to that, those middle three linemen. And I don't know if Brandon Henderson is good to go. I know that Bielema said that he was cramping a little bit, but that middle three of Geske, Kreutz, and the combination of Chrysler and Henderson, those guys have to be ready. They have to play their best game of the year, just because if it is that cold and it is that influential to your passing attack, you got to be able to lean on the run game. So if we're going X factors or players of the game, I'm going to cheat and I'm going to take the interior line. That's going to be my group. I know that picking three players is different than picking one, but that's going to be my guys this week.
I'll give it to you only because last week, Michigan, I mean, same recipe. They ran for 5 touchdowns, 4 of which were in the second half. So if that's the game plan and the key to beating a team like Northwestern, like you said, we're going to have to run in between the tackles, and hopefully that interior O-line can hold up. I'm kind of thinking, One of the things I love is when Florida boys come and play in cold weather. And like Devin Witherspoon always used to be a hoodie guy when the weather got cold. Gabe Backus, hoodie guy. I could see, I don't know, maybe see Zachary or some of the DBs, Xavier Scott, as hoodie guys this week. So I'm going to go with the hoodie guy and the king of the hoodie guys, and that's Gabe Backus. He's just a one-man wrecking crew. As long as he's wearing his hoodie, which he better be this week, like I said, it's his Superman cape. He plays even better with the hoodie on. And I don't know, I want him seeing his breath. I want him, you know, just
pinning his ears back.
When the helmets crack in the cold, those are the noises I want to hear. And we'll be there live reporting on the scene before the game, whether or not Gabe has his hoodie on and is ready to play. But Gabe Backus, another, I don't know, if he's making the jump to the NFL this year, this could be his last game. So give me two sacks for Gabe.
I like it, especially because Seth is definitely not playing, and you got a lot. I liked what we saw from JoJo Hayden, but you're going to have to rely heavily on Gabe to provide some pass rush disruption. So I like that. That's a good pick there.
All right. Score prediction, you noted. Line opened up a little steeper, but has come back to like 7.5. Illinois favorites in that one. What do you have score prediction-wise?
I'm going to go Illini 17, Northwestern 9.
Whoa.
I don't know if it's going to be three field goals or maybe like them trying to do the two-point conversion thing down 17-3, but that's where I'm leaning, just because the cold, it feels like it's going to be an absolute just a slog of a game, and you're going to have, and especially with Northwestern just trying to impose their will in the run game because they don't really have much of a passing attack. And Bielema, I'm sure, has the game plan ready to go for stymieing that. So you're just going to have maybe a punt fest in the cold and maybe a couple big plays off of like a fumble with the leather on the ball being a little bit tighter and a little bit more slippery. That's one thing that I feel like, and we actually saw it last week with Ethan Calic-Manis, like the sleeves, the coefficient of friction is just a little bit more slippery when you get the sleeves up against the colder balls. So I feel like you might see something like that happen. You know, if maybe a Northwestern punt returner is wearing his sleeves, that could be a game changer. But I'm seeing a lot of run, punt in this game, and I'll take the boys to win 17-9.
All right. I do want to note Illinois has not had an interception since the Oregon game.
Yep.
Dylan Gabriel pick in the second half was their last pick. So it's been three games now without an interception. So I know I went with Gabe, but we need our hoodie boy, Xavier Scott, to maybe get his hands on a ball.
We can't have the havoc kind of fade over the course of the season. I know some of that is like the teams you're going up against and maybe them being more run heavy. But in this case, you got to be able to force mistakes, especially if you're getting up early in this game.
Yeah. And our interception numbers look so good at the start of the year where we're picking balls off left and right. And then we've kind of fallen off the past few games. So an interception in this one, or one of those, you know, cold weather fumbles where the helmet gets on the ball and it flies up in the air and it just dies on a frozen tundra. Everyone's diving on it. Dog pile. Maybe a couple of those as well would be nice in a game like this. But I think Illinois wins this one big. I know Bill Connolly's SP Plus numbers, they were predicting us to win by, you know, 14, 15 points in this one. So metric-wise, the analytics look very much in Illinois' favor, more so than the betting line. I kind of like Illinois big in this one. I'm going to go 31-13 Illinois. And as going against logic, because these trophy games, Northwestern usually gets up for them. But like I said, after getting beat down the last 2 weeks by Ohio State, by Michigan, no longer having bowl eligibility in their fingertips, it's one of those ones where I think Illinois is going to be more locked in, more focused. Bielema's going to press the right buttons again, get us to 9-3 and get us a chance to get a 10-win season for the first time in I don't even know how long.
Eons, probably.
That's two Illinois predictions. Wrigley Field, 11 a.m. I'm glad we somehow pulled out Rutgers last week, because the vibes would have been a little bit different for this one. People wouldn't be as excited, I think, to to tune in, but everyone's going to want to see their team playing in a unique venue. It'll be a fun one. Big Ten Network, and I don't know. Let's get a ninth win, John. I have to ask you. Are you secretly rooting for Illinois to lose this week, given your 8-4 prediction before the year? I guess 8-5 prediction you made before the year.
I thought, didn't I bump it up to 9 games? I might have, or did I go 8-5?
I think you took the loss for the bowl game just to kind of hedge yourself a little bit.
I was hoping that I could get, I'd have to go back and listen, but I hadn't thought in my head that maybe it would get to 9 wins. I do have a pinned tweet that says that we're getting 9 wins this year. So I can I can throw a retweet out for that. If anyone wants to say that I predicted 8 regular season wins. No, of course I even the fact that like that we can parlay this to like some recruiting success and probably transfer portal success, just like everything.
Hey, beer man.
Get your beer here.
Grant Bierman stealing out recruits from Ryan Walters. We'll take it.
Yeah, that is one of the, if you had told us what 14 months ago, whenever that Purdue game happened last year, and the trajectory that it kind of looked like the two programs were at, and just thinking, oh yeah, we're going to steal the remaining headliner of Purdue's class next year, I would be like, I mean, cool, I guess, but that I don't see that happening. And now we're just getting a position of need filled from one of our rivals who, you know, talk that talk. I'm here for it.
This is how you build a program.
Exactly. Yeah. that I think is the biggest lesson is talking to Illini and Purdue fans, whatever that was, over 12 months ago, and being like, oh yeah, these are two programs going on completely different trajectories, and being like, well, actually, if you look at the underlying details, it's process, not results oriented judgments. And I think last year you'd be looking more at results oriented judgments, where now you can look at the processes and say, oh yeah, like one is clearly better than the other. So that then allows you to steal good recruits. And I'm glad that we're in that position.
Hey, 8-3 with a chance to get to 9-3 and then possibly 10-3 is just, it's the dream season and we're loving every second of it.
The fact that we can be like in a, not the top tier of the Big Ten, but at the top of the next tier. Like, just put that in that context, like not even like the record, just thinking about how they expanded the Big Ten. And in the first season of an 18 team Big Ten, we are clearly at the top of the second tier. Like, that's bananas.
Josh Whitman, we love you. You're the best. Keep doing
please
your thing.
Please stay forever.
Yeah, please stay forever.
Lifetime contract for Josh Whitman, for Brad Underwood, and for Brett Bielema. Please, just give them all 15-year deals right now for all the monies.
All right, we'll leave it at that. Thank you all for listening. Final regular season game preview. And we'll be back once again for a bowl preview, a Citrus Bowl preview likely, in the weeks to come. Go Illini.